Indeed, I mean, I feel a little bit embarrassed to talk after. In any case, so the story, I mean, you know, I want to tell you today, indeed, is some sort of, you know, the non tour de force in trying to understand what I would say is, you know, it's a new paradigm in the physics of matter that is topological quantum order. Although, you know, topological quantum order seems some sort of fancy name. Indeed, there were, you know, lots of examples, physical examples, much before the name was introduced, indeed. And the best known example is indeed fractional quantum Hall liquids. Okay, so these systems were discovered in between 1981 and 1982, and immediately it was realized that these particular liquids, I mean, they were not of the standard Mandel type. Okay, and I will explain what that means. So the big question is, what is behind this order? Okay, now. Indeed, what I will share today with you, I mean, is a set of ideas, okay, and as I said before, is the kind of thing that we've been discussing already for a long time with Sohar Nusinov, who is currently in Washington University, trying to understand what topological quantum order is, okay, and what are the consequences of having topological quantum order. Indeed, we were clearly not the first thinking about this. I will explain who are the main actors in this whole business. But indeed, for some people here, I would like to say that this is, you know, it's some sort of tail of dimensional reduction, okay? And this is very appropriate to talk about here, okay, where there are other people working in other areas where they are also talking about dimensional reduction. And indeed, you will realize this is very similar. Okay, and there are lots of connections. As I said, I mean, we were not the first to think about these things. I mean, indeed, there are many people thinking on this subject. But you know, one would say, and I think I'm fair about that. Although, if there are some people here that feel I'm fair, please raise your hand. That the main actors in this business are probably two guys. One is Xiaogang Wen from MIT. Okay, and the other is Kitaev from Caltech. I mean, indeed, these two guys, the only thing, one of the things that they share in common is that both are condensed matter physicists by training. Okay, but otherwise, they came from completely, in principle, completely different perspectives. In the case of Wen, he was coming from condensed matter physics, and he was indeed trying to understand what is the order behind fractional quantum Hall liquids, and more generically, what at that time also was very fancy and very famous, spin liquids, quantum spin liquids, okay? I mean, these people were behind this famous RVD state that Anderson proposed as a solution for the high-temperature superconductors. So he was trying to understand this, and indeed, what he was trying to do is to try to make some classification of quantum quarters. Now, from a completely different path, Kitaev was coming basically, of course, he knew about fractional quantum Hall liquids, and he worked with his PhD thesis on some of his stuff. But the idea that he can.
By quantum orders, you mean quantum phases? Or?
Quantum orders are orders that cannot be classified as lambda order parameters. I will come to that, okay? And I will try to be more specific. I mean, this is just a supposed warm up.
Who is
Katai's
thesis advisor?
Pardon?
Who is Katai's thesis advisor?
Well, he was in Landau Institute. I'm not sure whose advisor was, because I mean, he did this famous work. I mean, maybe you know, Daniel, but I mean, he did this famous work about quasi crystals, okay, during his PhD. This was with Levitov, Kitaev, and Levitov, I think, is a little bit more senior, but I would not say he was his advisor. I think that this guy worked alone mostly, okay. But he was in the right place, in any case. To be in the Landau Institute at that time was the right place to be, yeah.
And you know Wen's advisor was with him?
Oh, yes, I know. I know that's, I know that story, but I mean, I think
apologies,
I would ask him next time, I mean, who was his advisor, but I'm not sure he had one. In any case, he was coming, you know, from the side of a quantum computation, and he was trying essentially to use anions, okay, Enos are particles with fractional statistics, okay, and fractional quantum numbers. And he was trying to basically perform quantum computation using these objects with the hope that this type of computer indeed is hardware for Polena. Okay, this was the main idea, and I will explain what that thing is. Now, I mean, why one can be interested in this kind of things, okay, apart from the, you know, intellectual gain? Well, I mean, on one hand, you know, you can imagine, I'm a condensed matter physicist, and this is one of the things that, you know, for me is extremely important. I mean, is indeed I would like to start understanding, you know, whether we can indeed realize new states of matter, okay, that basically display this kind of order, and in particular, how can we engineer those orders, okay? So, I mean, one of the things is that, you know, when Pitaev introduced this model that I will explain a little bit in a minute, this is a kind of convoluted thing. I mean, it's not very clear that these models can be realized in real life, okay? So, I mean, one would like to know whether what is behind this kind of order and try to design some, you know, some system that indeed is more physical and displays similar type of behavior, okay? So, indeed, the motivation from the quantum computational, topological quantum computational point of view is they want to defeat the coherence, okay? So that's the main dream, okay? But indeed, you could imagine that there are other possible or potential uses of this kind of thing, which are indeed related to functionalities which are not necessarily computation or just, you know, simple condensed matter. Like, for example, quantum memories, that is what, for example, John Preskill introduced in 2002, okay? Or one could even think about precision measurement, quantum metrology, using these type of orders, or indeed here, okay, there are very famous people here, like Liz Morley and company, that they are thinking about these things, okay, with the three networks, okay, which are systems that have topological order. So you can think that there are other kind of usage, and indeed the list can be enlarged, probably. So far we don't know, okay, but indeed this is something that if you understand what produces the order, then you can start talking about functionalities. But if you don't understand, it's hard. And my problem as a condensed matter physicist is that I didn't understand what the thing is. Okay. Now let me tell you just briefly examples. Well, fractional quantum for liquids is the archetypical example. Okay, this is what we knew already for a long time is the case. But then the next example, famous example in this, is Kitaev's torical model. Okay, let me briefly tell you, although probably everyone who knows the Kitaev torical model, probably everyone here, right? I know there. Raise your hands. No, don't be shy. I think that almost everyone, okay? So I don't need to go through details. But the thing that you need to remember, which is important basically here, is that there are sets, okay, of operators, which are these logical operators. Well, they are not written here. These logical operators, which are defined as the products of, what? By the way, let me tell you for those that don't know, these are spin one half that are living on the bonds, okay? And there are two types of interactions. One is a Clapeyard interaction, and the other is star interaction. But there are very special operators here, okay, where supposing you are going to encode information, okay, you encode two qubits, that basically have the property that they commute with the Hamiltonian. Okay? So for the moment, let me tell you just that thing. But indeed, there were also, as I said, some spin liquids, although it was not very clear how to classify those things or what was behind those spin liquids. People were thinking in condensed matter about spin liquids with topological order because they were not finding any lambda order or the parameters. So what is behind? So let me tell you, after this warm-up, what I'm talking about here. So basically, I would start, you know, telling you, from my perspective, what topological quantum order is, okay? Then I would start basically telling you a little bit about some things which are really elementary, but we're not indeed emphasized, either in the context of quantum computation or condensed matter. That is what I would call, although this can be a very arrogant name, but I don't know of any other way, d-dimensional gauge-like symmetries, okay? So you will see what's the meaning of this little d dimension here, and you will see that indeed they are very important, and in particular, the most important thing, which are the physical consequences of having those symmetries, is that in many cases there is dimensional reduction. So basically, the physics that you see in those systems is physics of lower dimension. Okay? So remember holographic principle. Now, The thing that is probably, one of the, key results here is how to relate this, the existence of these d-dimensional gauge-like symmetries and topological quantum order. And indeed, I will have to define what topological quantum order is to say that these two things are related. But indeed, you will see that once I make this link, this will provide some sort of unifying symmetry framework for topological quantum order. Okay, contrary to what many people say, that there is no symmetry principle behind this, I would argue that there is. Okay, and you will see what is topological about topological quantum order. And indeed, once I know what is the symmetry framework that is behind this, indeed, I will be able to engineer a new model system with topological quantum order, and systems that in principle have been used to model, for example, transition metal compounds, and those systems display also topological quantum order. Then, what I'm going to do, indeed, I'm going to introduce some concept that indeed, I would say this is not this, I will mostly raise the question. I will say, what is the finding that we got? But we still don't know what is the full solution to this problem. So the whole thing is that although these systems were introduced, okay, to the Higgs coherence, all the studies were done at zero temperature. Another question you can ask is, what happens when you raise temperature? Now it turns out that indeed, Kitaeva is a very smart guy. He knew that thing, and he argued that if you have a gap, okay, to excitations, and it turns out between the ground state and the excited states, and it turns out that you're working at temperatures which are sufficiently low, much more than the value of this gap, then there is a Boltzmann suppression factor, and indeed, in principle, you are not going to do anything to your system. Okay, this is indeed, as you will see, not completely true. Okay, because as you know, when you have temperature, it's not an energy argument, but there is an energy entropy budget that you have to consider. And what you will see in these kind of systems is that there is a huge proliferation of topological defects. And this basically spoils the whole thing. Now, is there any solution for that? I don't know. Okay, there could be a solution. I think it's a very important problem to address. Okay, and this is a real problem. Okay, it's not a formal theoretical problem. Okay, this is physics. Okay, you want to build this computer, you have to think about temperature. Now, basically, what I hear quote the papers, okay, that I will talk about. Of course, I'm not going to talk about all these papers, okay? But basically, most of the things are here. This is one of the recent ones where, indeed, I will say probably nothing, okay? But just to let you know, how it is that in certain cases you can even use this kind of dimensional reduction and plus the emergence of particular gauge symmetries basically to study quantum criticality. And these kind of things, indeed, I will argue, I'm not going to show them, but I will argue that, you know, there are many compounds, transition metal compounds that display quantum criticality due to orbital order and not a spin of charge, things like that. Yes?
In your earlier slide, the last thing is thermal frigidity.
Yes.
Just the concept, if you have a topological entity of anything, especially the quantum order, supposedly it would be quite immune to just thermal perturbation or fluctuation. Is that what you're saying or not?
What I'm saying is that you will see what is the definition always depends on what is the definition you're using, right? Now, the definition is supposed to be something that indeed is useful for something. I would argue, following Kitaev, that is what I think is a useful definition, is that what it means that the system is topological order is that it is immune to local errors.
Yeah.
Okay? Which is a very sensible definition. Okay, as you will see.
Which is what thermal fluctuation is.
Now the thing, yes, you're absolutely right. However, the question is, as you will see, is when in the particular of the intertectonical model you can do it exactly. Okay? When you turn on temperature, what happens is you have to ask a question. I mean, indeed, these errors, which are the loss of that operators, are very bad, right? So the probability that you will get those errors, suppose, is very tiny, according to this argument. What I will show you is that it's not tiny. That's the whole point.
Oh, you're showing that it's
yes,
not tiny.
Yes, it's not tiny.
Okay, that's a surprise.
Okay. So yeah. But first, I need to define things, okay? Otherwise, it's very complicated. What is topological quantum order? Okay, perhaps, you know, I mean, again, I come from condensed matter physics, okay? And I mean, symmetry is a very important thing. And indeed, perhaps, you know, although Eugene Wigner was probably of the principal advocates of the use of symmetries to unravel, you know, regularities in nature's behavior, indeed, probably the best example that we know in condensed matter of the use of invariance principle is Landau theory of phase transition. Okay, beautiful theory, extraordinary theory. And indeed, you know, this Landau theory of phase transition has been indeed key to understand the property of the phases of matter, okay, allowing us to characterize those states of matter according to universal behaviors. You know, when people are talking about randomization group, scaling, universality, all these kind of things, I mean, you know, Landau has a lot to do with this. Okay? Now, but what is behind Landau? You can ask this question. Okay? So behind Landau, what there is some sort of, you know, relation between the existence of an order parameter and the breaking of the symmetry. And now you can ask a question, what kind of symmetry you can break in the case of, for example, a magnet, a ferromagnet. What indeed you are breaking below a certain temperature is a global symmetry. So, I mean, that will define these things more, you know, clearly. Okay, and with the breaking of this global symmetry, there is an order parameter. The order parameter is some sort of macroscopic quantity that characterizes globally the whole system. Okay, it's a magnet or it's not a magnet. Now, this new paradigm of topological order, indeed, like, for example, quantum position, gauge theory, spin liquid, string net MOS, whatever, they have no obvious broken symmetry. There is no broken symmetry. Okay? Of course, we know that there are phase transitions without broken symmetry. We know that. If you go to gauge theories, you know that there are confined and deconfined transitions, and there is no broken symmetry. You have to characterize those phases with Wilson loops. Okay? So we know that. But what characterizes this order? Is some sort of non-local order parameter, what it is behind. Let me expand on this example, and let me now formulate this example in a language that you will see what's a connection with ETEC. So imagine that you have a magnet. This is a cartoon of what a magnet is. So you are at a temperature which is much larger or larger than the critical temperature, the Curie temperature, let's say, and the system is disordered, it's in a disordered phase, and as I said, this order parameter is equal to zero. So I start lowering the temperature, and there is a moment where there is a temperature here, okay, where the system starts having some sort of ordering, okay, some sort of magnetism, okay, so with an order parameter that is different from zero, and it is exactly at this point where you start breaking a symmetry in your problem. For example, you can break SU2 symmetry, or you can break, you know, in the case of an icing magnet, Z2, okay, so you break some symmetry. Now, let me formulate this in a different way. Okay, this is a very well-known thing, okay? So, let me now take, you know, the magnetization as a local observable, okay? And now let me ask the following question. I know that in order to have a broken symmetry, I need the degeneracy. If you don't have the degeneracy, at least even in the thermodynamic limit I'm talking about, okay? If you don't have the degeneracy, then there is no broken symmetry. That's clear, okay? So, for example, in the magnet, you know, you have, let's say, an icy magnet, you have all up or all down, but they have exactly the same energy. Okay, you have to choose one of them. But suppose I have the ground state of this up and this down, and I ask a question, can I use now a local observable, okay, just to distinguish between these two states? The answer is yes, because if I measure on one or the other, they are not the same. They are different. Okay? So, in other words, I can say now that these Landau orders are orders where if I perform local measurements, I can distinguish the ground states. Now, before I enter into the topological quantum order, let me tell you what are all the concepts that have been introduced in topological quantum order. And what the whole question is, what implies what? What, you know, what is a sufficient condition, a necessary condition for what? Okay? And these are all the concepts that were introduced in the context of topological quantum order. Indeed, there was a concept, well, of symmetry, not so much, okay, but yes, of degeneracy, okay? So Hittab is talking about degenerate ground state. There is a concept of a fractionalization of quantum numbers, okay? There is, some people were talking about entanglement entropy, okay? Topological entanglement entropy. Some people are talking about maximal extreme branch correlators, so you have correlations that involve not just local things, like for example, I take one spin here and I correlate with another spin at long distances, but I need some sort of intermediate thing, like a string, okay, of spins in the middle to have long range order. Okay? So this is a case of a string correlator. You can imagine that you have planes, and that's a brain correlator or things like that. And you can make it as complicated. So the question is, what is needed to display topological quantum order? What is the minimal thing that you need? Now, of course, I have to say what is topological quantum order. Otherwise, I cannot say what determines topological quantum order. And indeed, what you still listen these days, okay, in every single conference, I'm just coming from a conference on quantum magnetism, and they were looking at some quantum spin liquids that have topological order. You will listen this. It's an order whose ground state degeneracy depends on the surface topology of the manifold. Well, it sounds basically on the top, you know, on where you are embedding your system. If you are embedding your system in a torus or in a Riemann surface, you know, with 300 holes, or on a disk, or on a sphere, or whatever. So the ground state degeneracy depends on that. Okay. So the only topological thing about topological order is the fact that there is a topology of the manifold. Okay. It seems to be the case. Okay. Now, I don't like this definition for a very simple reason.
But can I ask you just at this level, are you defining topology in the base space or the fiber bundle?
No, I'm defining on the base space. Okay. Okay. On the base space. And what I'm saying is that, let me tell you, what I'm saying is that this definition I don't like precisely for the reason that I can build always states, systems that have local orders and whose ground state degeneracy depends on the manifold. And we have examples of that thing. So, for example, dimer models that I can characterize my ground state, my order with dimer correlation function, and the degeneracy depends on where I embed my system. So there is not one-to-one correspondence. Of course, if you have a system that has topological quantum order, then you will have this kind of behavior. This is true, but not in the other way around. That's the reason why I don't like as a definition. Now, the definition I like, okay, what I would say is the best concept that I can find that distinguishes from Landau, indeed, is theta s definition. In this theta s definition is a condition on exactly remember what I said for these magnets, okay, that if I pick up two ground states and now I try to use local operators, okay, or quasi-local operators, I can distinguish, okay, the ground states. But theta s said, no, you cannot distinguish. Basically, if I take two ground states now, alpha, alpha, or beta, beta, I get the same expectation value, C. Right? That's different than lambda. And I like this because that's different. Okay? This is not lambda order. Clear. In lambda order, you don't have this problem. Of course, Kitai's motivation was a different one. Kitai's motivation was robustness. Okay? Kitai knew perfectly well that you take a fractional quantum Hall liquid, you put impurities. Okay? Of course, it depends how many impurities you put, but you put a reasonable amount of impurities and you always have a perfect quantization. You have a plateau. Okay, so he knew that. He knew that those impurities were not destroying the order. Okay, so he was thinking about robustness. However, let me tell you that robustness, in principle, doesn't look like the same thing. But it would be nice to prove that it's exactly the same thing. Because if I'm thinking of robustness as something that leaves the genetics, I can now apply the generic perturbation theory. I have the generic manifold, apply the generic perturbation theory. But the conditions to leave the genetics in the generic perturbation theory is not this one. It is the one here. If I want to leave the degeneracy to a certain order in perturbation theory, there is a Green's function here, okay? And this Green's function here is a non-local operator. Now, if someone can say that this is local in some sense, then the two things are the same, okay? So, but I would like to say for the moment that indeed what Kitaev's definition of topological quantum order is a condition on non-distinguishability of ground state.
Okay. So, I mean, that condition is also just the quantum error correction.
Yes, I will come to that.
Oh, okay.
So, I would say the same things in different languages now. First, I will use the language of condensed matter, okay? And then I will use your language, okay? So, which I don't, you know, master, but I understand better this language. So, Indeed, you can think now that the distinction physically for a condensed matter physicist between lambda orders and topological quantum order is the fact that I have my system that has some degeneracy here, produced by whatever, I don't care, and now I come with an error. I come with some impurity. I put impurities. Okay? Now I put impurities and I look how is that the ground state is degeneracy is lifted. Okay, in general, of course, this doesn't have any symmetry, therefore I will lift the whole degeneracy. But what you see here is that the degeneracy here is lifted as a power law. However, and this has never been proved rigorously, let me tell you, but this is the common wisdom. What happens here when you add one of these local operators as an error in a quantum Hall liquid, for example, and this is what Wendt argued in 1993, is that the lifting of the thing is exponentially small. Okay? So there is a difference between these two scales. Okay? Now, from my perspective, what is important here is that if I see before I put the thing, how is that these different ground states are connected, indeed, they are connected through some sort of quasi-local operators. But if I see how these things are connected, as I will show you in a minute, they are connected through operators. These connecting operators are symmetries of the Hamiltonian, but are symmetries that have different dimensions. Okay? Indeed, these operators here have the additional property that they cannot commute, okay, in general. Because indeed, I mean, this is connected to the gradient operations, okay? Otherwise, it's trivial. Now, if I want to go to the condition for error detection, indeed, it's what, I mean, what I think you were trying to tell me, okay? Now you can think you have your system and it's in a donut, okay? And I have some errors here and this error propagates here, okay? But I have these logical operators defined here, okay? And there is some protected subspace, which is, you know, this ground state subspace. And indeed, as long as there is this condition that the projection of the error on that subspace commutes with the logical operator, I mean, basically it causes no harm to that thing. And indeed, what you can show is that theta F's trivially show that theta F's non-distinguishability condition implies this condition. Okay? So, if you have, I think that
they're equivalent.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So, depends who's speaking, says in a different way. Now, if I'm going to tell to my son what is the difference between the two things, I would say, well, here, you know, I do something. They do not disappear, okay? But I'm doing something, okay? Now I have to apply error corrections to come back to the same thing. But if I have one of these systems, I put some errors, and something happens that, you know, the system in the end is robust. That's a cartoon, okay? It's not completely true, okay? But that's a cartoon of the difference between the two things. And I will show why it's not completely true. So, what is the... Randall, can you bring me some water?
Yeah.
Okay. Stay. So what is the unifying principle? What is the unifying principle behind topological quantum order? So once I accept these definitions, I will try to show you now, of course, that there is a symmetry principle behind, okay? So to this end, to show you that there is a symmetry principle, I will start talking about dimensional reaction. I need to cut it. So gauge-like symmetries. Again, maybe this is a very arrogant name. I don't know. Okay? But I didn't find any better definition for, you know, some unique name for this full set of symmetry. So suppose I give you a theory, I give you a system in the dimensions. So my system lives in the dimensions. Theta A small lives in 2. V capital D equals to 2. Okay? So of course, I mean, this is a formal definition. Let's forget about formal definition. Okay? So I can imagine that I perform transformations. Thank you very much. Excellent. I can imagine that I perform transformations in my system, okay? And this transformation, in a sense, has a dimensionality attached to it, okay? And you will see what that thing means. And this dimensionality attached to this set of transformation has a dimension that is little d, smaller or equal to capital D. Okay, of course, I cannot perform transformations in a dimension that is larger than the dimension of my physical system. Okay, so let's see the two examples that we know. Okay. So I mean, and of course, this group of transformations, they may form a group GD that is a group of symmetries of my problem. Okay. So let's assume D equals to zero. That's gauge symmetry. We know that means that we perform some local rotation. We said before that if D is equal to D, it's a global symmetry. This is Landau. Okay. But the question is, what happens if D is smaller than D and is not zero? Okay. What are the physical consequences? Let me put an example, okay? So you will see what I mean. So, suppose I take D equals to 2. And now I take a theory like this, trivial theory, Ising-Gage theory, okay? It's a plaquette interaction, okay, between these four spins that are living on the bonds. And now I decide to flip these spins. So I flip these spins with this local operator. That's a symmetry. This commute with this Hamiltonian, okay? So that's a D equals 0. Okay, because it's a quasi-local thing. I just flip four spins here, and that's a symmetry. I'm doing absolutely nothing. Let me go to the other extreme. Suppose I take an XY model. That's an XY model, okay? So I have interaction that is XX, YY in all directions here. And I decide now to flip all spins. If I decide to flip all spins by some continuous angle theta, what happens is that this operator here, this unitary here, for whatever quantity, I mean, it's a continuous symmetry indeed. Okay, it's a symmetry, commutes with the Hamiltonian. So this is a D equals to D equals to 2. That's a global symmetry, okay, of the XY model. Okay, now the question is whether you can break the symmetry or not. In two dimensions, it's a different story. Okay, but in principle, that's a global symmetry. Now, let's imagine now I take a different model. I take a model now where, along this direction, I consider interactions which are of the form sigma x, 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 but along the y direction, I put sigma y, sigma y, sigma y, sigma y, sigma y, sigma y. This is known as orbital compass model. Now, in this model, if I pick up these symmetries here, these unitaries, okay, that is, this unitary, for example, corresponds, well, no, this unitary corresponds to rotating all these different spins in a row, okay, and it commutes with the Hamiltonian. But this symmetry is not like this. This symmetry is not like this. This is a D equals to 1 symmetry. Okay? Okay. So let me, this, I mean, these are words. Okay. So let me skip this just to get to the point. Okay? So you can relate this to very faces, animal faces. So the important thing is what are the physical consequences of these things? As usual, you know that if you have symmetries, okay, I mean, in particular, if the symmetries are continuous symmetries, you know that the Noether theorem tells you that there are conserved charges, okay? And you know that the number of continuity equations, of conserved equations that you get, of course, depends. I mean, if you have, you know, a gauge symmetry, you know that there is an additional Gauss law. And if you don't have, you have a typical continuity equation. But you can imagine that if you have now additional symmetries, there can be additional conservation laws. And indeed, what happens is that there are additional conserved currents that live in dimensions which are little d. Okay? Now, the main concept or the main consequence of these little d dimensional symmetries is the concept of dimensional reduction. The concept of dimensional reduction, what it means, is that that particular physical system is going to have excitations, okay, that live in the little d. Not in the large D. Here is an example. Suppose I take this orbital compass model and I break one link here. Okay? I break one link. So now, if I do that, I will have an excitation here that is a soliton. But this soliton is living in one dimension. So in a two-dimensional system, I have excitations of a one-dimensional system. Okay? Remember the holographic principle. Okay, so, and this always happens, okay, and indeed you can have, I don't know, for those of you that know about topological field theory, I mean, you can have topological terms that appears in lower dimensional symmetries, you know, like Chern-Simon terms, or, you know, I don't know if you know about Wessumino terms and this kind of thing, okay, and indeed you have this, you know, topological defects that can be freely propagated in lower dimensions. Now, and here is where you start seeing what is another important consequence of the thing. to break or not to break. Okay, so why this is different than lambda? Okay, I said before that in the lambda case, when you have global symmetries, you can break the symmetries, right? But of course, you can break the symmetries depending on the dimension, okay, of the problem. We know that, and we knew that the symmetries are global. That means little d equals to capital D. But we know that there is a Mermin-Wagner theorem, for example, in two dimensions, that is telling you that, well, if you are in a continuous symmetry, for example, I mean, a two-dimensional system with a continuous symmetry, you know you cannot break that thing. Okay? However, in two dimensions, you have Coster-Lithalis transitions, so there are phase transitions. Okay? But you cannot break. But in general, you have a global symmetry, and in higher dimensions, or depending on what the symmetry is, you can break. Here is the same. Okay? So, but now, here, you have to think, since you have lower dimensional symmetries, now you have to ask the same question, but the system, although lives in three dimensions, or in two dimensions, in capital D, you have to ask a question for the lower dimensional symmetry. Okay? For example, we know that if D is equal to zero, it's a gauge symmetry, we know that you cannot, a spontaneous symmetry break is forbidden. This has a name. This is called Elitsu theorem. We know that, yes.
So can you explain that in the context of the Ising model? I mean, if you just have it, it will have some state, right? And that'll break
the of the, which Ising model?
The Plaquette one that you had as the example, say, if you're d equals zero.
Oh, in the case, in the there?
Yeah.
Oh, you cannot break. Because what happens is that, this is known in gauge theories, okay? So what happens is that if you take that theory, okay, and now you calculate the expectation value of non-gauge invariant quantities, okay? What happens is exactly identical to zero. It's identical to zero. That's the answer.
The expectation value over
any operator.
All possible states. I mean, it's
the expectation value of your theory over any set of non-gauge invariant operators.
But the expectation value for what state? I mean, for
oh, the theory. I mean, if
the
you have
temperature state.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a thermal theory, it's going to be over the thermal state. If you have a ground state theory, over the ground state, I mean.
But for the ground state, that's not true, right? I mean.
The ground state what?
The ground state is degenerate, and you've reached any given ground state, so you do break these.
No. You cannot break.
But they, no.
Okay. There is, okay, okay, let me see if I understand your question. Let me see if I understand the question. This is a case where this symmetry is exactly the same as a local operator, okay?
Yeah.
And you are right in a sense, in the following sense. In that particular theory, okay, this gauge theory, I was thinking in the gauge theory where you also have the transverse term, okay? In that particular theory, you can break. That's an exception theory. I mean, you have to go to temperature. I mean, an issue theory, I mean, the theory you're saying, I mean, this Ising gauge theory, you have to add another term, which is the sigma x. Okay.
Okay.
The transverse term you have to add.
It doesn't that already break the gauge symmetry then? No, I guess not.
No. No. If you add these symmetries that I wrote there, these products, they commute.
Yeah.
It's not breaking.
Right.
So this is what is called the full gauge theory. So that theory at t equals zero gives you basically a zero expectation value. Now the Elitsu theorem is proved at finite temperature. So, in other words, you're absolutely right. If I take the ground state of this model without the transverse term, you will get an expectation value that is different from zero. This is true.
Sorry. So
but it's a peculiarity.
So adding such a term makes the ground state non-degenerate, basically.
Pardon me, sorry?
So adding the transverse term makes the ground state non-degenerate?
It makes the degenerate differently. You don't have this redundancy that you have in the pure Ising gauge.
Oh, I see. It's degenerate, but basically they're superpositions of these transitions. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, if you try to use the Elitsu theorem, strictly speaking, as t equals zero for the one I wrote, it doesn't work. But as soon as you put a little bit of temperature, it gives zero. Or if you have the full theory, it gives zero too. Okay, but okay, so I have to speed up a little bit, but you know, indeed you can prove, and this is not something I prove, this was proved by Socar and Christian Batista, that there is a generalized Elitsu theorem. Okay, this generalized Elitsu theorem, basically this is the result. Okay, in d equals zero, this is Elitsu. In D equals 1, a spontaneous symmetry breaking is forbidden. So that's the reason why in this orbital compass model, you are not going to break the D equals 1 symmetry. That's the reason why it's topologically ordered. That's the reason why in the Kitaev model, you cannot break the symmetry, as you will see. Okay? So in D equals 2, continuous spontaneous symmetry breaking is forbidden. D equals 2, discrete, may be broken. So if you take one of these systems that has, for example, the orbital compass model in three dimensions that have planes with discrete symmetries, those discrete symmetries can be broken. Okay? If it's continuous, it cannot be broken, etc., etc. And in general, so you see that there is a dimensional reduction. Now the question of to break or not to break is reduced with the dimension of the symmetry, and not the dimension of the physical space. Okay? And that's important, as you will see. So, as you can imagine, okay, this is the thing that I wanted to accomplish. That is to relate Kitaev's definition of topological quantum order and the existence of these lower dimensional symmetries. Okay, and indeed there is a problem you can prove. That is a theorem where if you have a system, and of course there are these conditions about finite range and strength, because otherwise you cannot make any proof, okay, in which all ground states satisfying the non-distinguishability, the Kitaev's condition, can be linked. Remember this T mu that I wrote, I were the linking operation. These are the symmetries, the generators of the symmetry. Okay? Can be linked by discrete, this more than 2, or continuous, this more than 3, generalized gauge like symmetries, has topological quantum order at all temperatures. Okay? So, this is what is the symmetry framework for topological quantum order. So, in other words, this is sufficient. What we prove is a sufficient condition, it's not a necessary. What we prove is that if now you give me a system that displays this symmetry, I look at what is little d, okay? What is little d, depending is a continuous symmetry or is a discrete symmetry, and then I say, oh, this system has topological quantum order or not. All known examples satisfy exactly the theory. And indeed, I can give you many more. Once I know the symmetry principle, I have to build a model that has these symmetries, and then I know it's topologically ordered. Okay? Now, the other way around, we didn't prove. All systems that, you know, are topological quantum order means that, you know, they, at least I don't know. Okay, now this I will skip because, I mean, it's crazy. Okay, and now you can get new examples. For example, now you go to condensed matter, you go to all, you know, you take all the dust of all the papers, okay, about, you know, different systems, and you immediately see that, you know, there are descriptions of transition methods, okay, where they are using either orbital compass model, or they are using this Kuchel-Comsky. I mean, this is for people that know, I mean, I'm not sure people know here about these things, but anyhow, I shall say if someone knows about these models. Or this was indeed known already in these Josephson arrays, P plus IP arrays, okay, for example, in Strontium-Rutenitz, okay, that this model, indeed, one can prove is exactly dual to the 2D orbital compass model, okay? So these two models are the same model, okay? Then you have Klein spin models, which are pyroclore structures, okay, that you have lots of quantum magnets, which are like this. Okay, and indeed we came recently, I'm not going to go through this, okay, recently with some ideas on maybe an application in Kasson-Ruthenitz, okay, of similar ideas where you have orbital order, but now you don't, and then there is a new gauge symmetry, but this is too technical and I have no time. So, I need to finish at 5:05, right? Okay, good. Now, just to say a few words now, I said that there is a symmetry principle, but, you know, I'm not very satisfied with that thing in the sense that that's nice that there is a symmetry principle, it's great. But I would like to, for example, if I have someone gives me a model, I would like to tell you the model can have impurities, okay, can have all kinds of things. I would like to tell you that the system has topological order, okay? So, and people have been thinking about that. So, how to characterize those orders. And indeed, people propose, for example, topological entanglement entropy as a particular way of basically showing that a system has topological quantum order. Unfortunately, this not always works, Okay, it's not an if and only if condition. People can be thinking about the string brain correlations, and indeed, also I can show you it doesn't work. There are counterexamples. Okay, so you can have systems that have local orders, and they still have, you know, string brain correlations. Okay, so it's not an indication of that. Or many people at the very beginning, indeed, long time ago. By now, of course, I mean it's known that it has nothing to do. We're thinking about, let's look at the Hamiltonian spectrum. Okay, no, topology at quantum Mohr is a property of states. It's not a property of spectrum. And this I can show you, indeed, through a very simple example. Okay, so suppose I take theta historical model, and you know what this model is. I can rotate the model, perform Cramer's Vanier dualities to this model, and I map this model into two Ising chains. The partition function of theta's model is no more than these two things. And now you can do everything. Absolutely everything. You can do all of the calculations you want, okay, and you can address the questions I'm going to address in a few minutes, okay? But let me tell you something else. I can perform another duality, and I went to Wentz-Plaquette model. So Wentz-Plaquette model, Kita historical model, two Ising chains are exactly the same model. They are not different, okay? Let's forget about string orders. Thermal fragility. So far what I've been trying to do, I've been trying to tell you what I think is behind topological quantum order. What is topological about topological quantum order is the fact that the symmetries are not gauged, they are not global. They have some intermediate dimension, okay, that of course, this is where the topology is, because I need to define that dimension, okay? So this is what is topological, it's a special symmetry, okay? But now, I told you about the general consequence, but now let me tell you about a physical consequence, okay, of these things. And this is what I'm saying is, I believe that this is one of those areas that Microsoft and company have to look at very, very seriously, okay? Okay. Let me take a Kita historical model, okay? We have that for other models too, okay? Not only Kita historical model. This is a very generic thing. So, I said that you have a Hamiltonian where you have Plaquette interactions and you have star interactions here, okay? So these are defined here. Now, these operators, which are the connecting T mu operators I was defining before, are this logical operator, which has the products over these lines of sigma x's or sigma z's, okay, which form a C2 cross C2, okay, group. Okay. Now, this operator satisfies this commutation relation. Now, what you can show is that the free energy of this problem is analytic. There is no thermodynamic phase transition. I already told you, the partition function of this model is exactly, not approximately, not in any asymptotic sense, renormalization group sense. No, it's exactly. Okay, the same. And we know that the IC model in one dimension has no phase transition at finite temperature. Okay? So now you can ask a question. Okay, so let's assume that I encoded these operators. And now the question I'm asking is, okay, I want to see what is expectation value, the thermodynamic expectation value of these things. I mean, if the system is finite, of course it's zero. Okay, by symmetry, that's a trivial statement. Okay, so you know that's not the right question. So the right question is that you need to add some sort of symmetry breaking field to the problem, calculate the partition function with the symmetry breaking field, then what you do is you do the thermodynamic limit, and then you do this symmetry breaking field going to zero. This is the way you see whether there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking or not, and that's the way you have to compute the thing seriously if you want to determine the expectation value of the thing. However, this is zero. Again, not only for a finite system, but also for the thermodynamic limit is equal to zero. So, the reason is obvious, okay? So, from the physics point of view, I already told you the answer is very simple. So, suppose I look at what are the excitations of this model now from the language of the spins of the Ising chain. Okay, these models are dual. The duality is a no-local transformation. It's a very no-local transformation that is changing some local degrees of freedom into non-local degrees of freedom. Now I ask the following question. Okay, let's assume I flip a certain number of spins in an island And I ask a question, what is the cost in energy of flipping this island? Well, the cost in energy is basically is twice, okay, this plus twice this, right? So if now I'm thinking, what is the cost of forming an island of any size, not just this particular size, but of any size, the cost in energy is exactly the same. Does not change, okay, for obvious reasons. I mean, that's very clear. And what happens is that although the energy does not change, okay, free energy is energy minus TS, minus entropy, and the entropy grows logarithmically with the system size. Okay, you have all possible ways of producing this defect. So there is a proliferation of defects. Okay, that's another way of explaining why, if you want to use Peyer's-like arguments, okay, why there is no phase transition in the one-dimensional Ising model. Okay, so that's what happened in this model. Now, we've been talking about this during this meeting that was, I think you were, Daniel, you were here, I mean, last year, okay, and indeed, the question that was raised by John Preskill was, but this is not the right question, because that's a thermodynamic average, and that's not, indeed, what you should be asking. You should be asking that, okay, you prepare your state, you put that state there. Suppose you have a quantum memory, and you put your quantum state there, and now you ask a question, how long does it take? Okay, if the time it takes grow with the system size, that's good. If that's not, it's bad. Well, but here again, you can answer this question. Of course, this question you cannot answer for everything, okay, analytically. But for this model, we know, okay, because Glauber already did this for us, for the Ising model. Already did the time dynamics. So the only thing you have to do is use the duality to translate everything from one model to the other and then use the results of Glauber. And when you use the result of Glauber, this is equivalent to say, I want to calculate this autocorrelation time. That's a question. Does this autocorrelation time depends on system size? The answer is no. Does not depend. It's this quantity. The autocorrelation time does not depend. Of course, you have a long time dynamics and intermediate time dynamics with different exponents, okay? So, but the thing goes exponentially to zero, okay, with the time autocorrelation time that is does not grow with the system size. What is the idea? Whenever you have a lambda worthy parameter, you know the usual picture that they give you. There is nothing, but I mean, you have to believe me. You know, they still see all textbooks, okay? Where you have up and down ground space, so for example, for an Ising magnet, and this is for a finite system, but then you ask a question how this height grows with system size, and you know it grows with system size. That's good, because if I put the thing here, now through thermodynamic limit, the probability of passing to the other place is very low, right? But what happens here is that this is fixed. Doesn't grow with the system size. So you have a time autocorrelation time that is finite.
But the operations are not one ground state to the other one are non local, right?
The operation, sorry?
That takes one ground state to the other.
Yes, but this is irrelevant because you're thinking in terms of pure states. When you put thermodynamics, okay?
No, I'm thinking like a Monte Carlo technique for a classical system, right?
Yeah.
I think about the Ising model and maybe what I do is I flip one spin with certain probability and to go from the one that is all ups and all downs.
This is not nature. I mean, this is what you're doing, it's a local move. You can do a global move and the thing goes away.
Yeah, but so, I mean, what is why would you expect that nature will do a non local move in this
particular case? What happens from that is you get a constant density of defects at finite temperature,
uh-huh,
and they can wander around, and once enough of them are kind of hit each other.
Okay.
Then there's no way to tell which state you're in. So you don't directly do a big non-local move, but you build it up out of a lot of local.
That's right. But he's asking. But of course the question is time, right? How long does it take? And what I'm arguing is that of course you can cheat a little bit because if you can back and then go back, you can cheat a little bit because you see if I go to zero temperature, okay? If I go to zero temperature here. This autocorrelation time goes like an exponential, and this is the gap of your system.
That's well.
Okay?
the gap is 1 here.
Well, there is some units, there is some j, there is a log of 2, I mean, whatever. It's order 1. It's order 1. Okay, it's a number order 1. So on beta goes to infinity. So, question. If you have a gap that is sufficient, here you can do calculation, right? So if you have a gap that is sufficient to be, okay, although this does not scale with the system size, still can be very large at the time. You can make it large. However, you ask a question, what is the gap for the fifth half state? And the answer is, in the best scenario, is milli-Kelvin. Forget it. I mean, it's impossible. You need to, I mean, there must be some other physical principle to make it work. I mean, it's impossible to make it work. Now, the question now you can ask is, but you see, there is no phase transition here, right? There is no thermodynamic phase transition. And you know, you can, you know, intuitively think that if I find something that has a phase transition, then maybe it can help me to stabilize the system, right? To make it more coherent. I mean, it's intuitive. Now, the phase transition clearly cannot be a lambda of phase transition, because we know that if it's a lambda of phase transition, then it's not topologically ordered, right? Because then local errors is going to spoil the whole thing. So we need a very weird phase transition. So we need a phase transition that is signaled by non-analysis of a free energy, but is not a symmetry breaking transition. Okay, but we can achieve that. The way to achieve is you can generalize this model, Kita historical model in 3 dimensions, and now you can show that there is a thermodynamic phase transition, because you show that the partition function is the product of the partition function of a 3D Ising-Gauge model times a 1D Ising model. And this 3D Ising-Gauge model is also dual to the 3D Ising model, and you know this temperature has been computed numerically. I mean, it's not exact solution here. Okay. So, and indeed, you can also prove that this system has topological order. Okay? Therefore, now you can ask the question, what are these expectations? Here, I don't know how to do time dependence. Because to do time dependence here, I need to calculate the correlation. I mean, I can do it numerically, but I don't know how to do it analytically. Okay? However, you can calculate this, the thermodynamic things. And when you calculate the thermodynamic things, it's also equal to 0. Okay? So, the phase transition didn't help. Okay? The phase transition didn't help. So I need to start finishing. Okay. So, what I have done, okay, maybe it's completely irrelevant, let me tell you what I think are the important questions, okay? Well, that's an important question, clearly, okay? And you know, that's clearly an important question, but what do I think are the important questions that needs to be answered, okay? But before I'm not sure these are the important questions, but what's important for me?
But before you move on to what's important to you, one thing I'd like to understand is the thermal frigidity you're trying to get across, what is the reason for that?
The reason is that there are 2 ways of seeing the thing. The thermal fragility is related to the fact that these orders do not have an order parameter. So let me give you a physicist's interpretation of why classical error correction works. Okay? Not a mathematician definition, probably it's a completely different one. A physicist. That's the way I see the thing. Why people build, they put, you know, memories. I mean, Motorola, you know, these guys are putting memories either in magnets or in ferroelectrics, okay, in polarized things. Let me tell you, I may be wrong. I mean, I tried to sell this thing to Manny and he doesn't see why, but anyhow, that's the way I am seeing it. The fact that there is a collective behavior in those things make the things robust collectively, okay, from the classical point of view. So the probability of flipping those things, okay, it's much more than if you don't have this kind of lambda order parameter. Now, in these systems, you don't have a lambda order parameter. Okay? There is no lambda order parameter. There is this kind of no local thing that looks very robust. But the problem is that it looks very robust at t equals 0, exactly t equals 0. And that's beautiful, it's great. But as soon as you put, you know, a match and you hit the thing, automatically, all the things that were bad for the topological order start proliferating. all these errors are where bad.
Yeah, but right at that point, right, when you start changing something locally, earlier the definition in terms of robustness, I thought it was with respect to gradual changes. In fact, there's a difference between the old order and then in the gap, and you pointed out, it's like Wynn pointed out, it's an exponentially small one, right?
Yes. So it's that, equal zero.
Okay. Now, so it's at equal zero, but if let's just focus on global versus local.
Yes.
That's what I want to understand, because usually the topological structure for anything is sort of a little bit global, right?
But it's not global in the sense of symmetry.
Okay, but in terms of local operations, the perturbation or fluctuation that I introduce, I'm just trying to understand the robustness condition. Doesn't that address the robustness in terms of small changes? Gradually, when you build up this long range.
Yes. What I'm saying is, so you need to understand. You need to understand the following. When you are adding temperature, okay, if you think in equilibrium, you start mixing everything, okay. If you're thinking in time, it's a different story, okay. I mean, in time it's a different story. But then the question you have to ask in time is whether in those systems the barriers that you have here between different configurations, topological set, whatever you want to call it, okay, those barriers are finite, or they are, you know, they are tiny or they are large. What I'm arguing that this is very system dependent, and this is something that you have to analyze on a case by case example. And what I'm saying, in this case of the Kita rhetorical model, I can compute exactly. Okay, but not in the other ones. And in that case, I see that the thing is exponentially small, even in time. But there is a finite operation time.
So let me not ask the third one, because you're right. I mean, it's an ensemble as well. Let me just narrow it down to a local perturbation. So it's getting back to error correction. Okay? And you seem to have a physicist way to understand that in this setting. And that's what I'd like to understand. But so if you say that you do it in a time order way, if I just hit one local, give some change to a local, right, value or parameter, what would happen there? You still have the order, or it would fizzle away? Is it that?
No, it doesn't. The order doesn't go away.
But
you need a finite concentration. The order doesn't go away. I mean, you have topological quantum order. What I'm arguing is that the hardware fault tolerance that everyone was talking about from the very beginning, okay, is degraded. So you need to do topological quantum error correction. I don't know how to call it.
So is the equivalent to say that, I mean, like, global excitations will happen, I mean, like, will happen even if you put a very small temperature, like?
Yeah.
Okay, is that exactly. The argument?
Exactly.
Okay. That would ruin it.
So
So what you say is basically if I flip one, for example, then that will
No. Because finite temperature means not you're flipping one, you're flipping a constant density.
Exactly.
Or on
some that density is exponentially small in temperature of the gap, but there's lots and lots of them, right? And then the number of defects get scaled with the size of the system.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now the question is whether those defects will rapidly disappear or whether they'll just wander around.
That's right. That's the question. What's the question? Yes.
No, that's something I don't understand.
Okay, in any case, we can continue the discussion. So for those that they want to leave, I just will say what I think are the important questions to answer, at least before I leave. Okay? So what I think are the important questions to answer, in my opinion, okay, are the following. How can you classify and characterize this thing? We know how to classify lambda or orders. No, I mean, this has been known for decades, okay? So what is the equivalent of the thing here? I think that, entanglement entropy, I don't think that's the way. Generalized entanglement, I don't know either. I mean, these things, I have no clue whether they can do. Of course, I could use, group theory using these symmetries, but I would like something better than that. I don't like it very much, okay? Now, another thing that I think, I mean, I'm a physicist, and as a physicist, condensed matter physicist, okay, I like to measure things, okay? So what do I have to tell experimentalists? They have to measure, okay, to detect topological quantum order in a system. Okay, No. Someone will come and say, oh, you know, I mean, this is good, you have edge currents. This is not always true. I can have systems that have edge currents, and it's not topological. I can give you an example. Well, I mean, yeah, you have fractionalization. That's not true. Polyacetylene has fractionalization. It's not topologically ordered. So, what do I need to do, okay, to tell experimentalists, okay, that there is that thing? Then the thermal thing. I think this needs to be straightened out. To tell you the truth, I think that for at least quantum computation purposes, this is a very important question, okay, that needs to be addressed seriously, okay, and not just more or less seriously. Then there are more, you know, maybe philosophical or, I don't know, maybe not so philosophical. I know what I can do with lambda order parameters. I know what I can do with system I have that displays lambda order. I know what I can do means functionalities, okay? I can use for something. Okay, we're always using, you know, piezoelectric materials or this or, you know, magnets. So I know what to do. What can I do with this? Okay, so that's a question that I think no one needs to think about. And then this is a more theoretical question that indeed has ramifications in other things, but is, what is the relation between these symmetries and topological quantum field theories? Is there any relation, no relation? What are the topological quantum field theories that maybe correspond to the things? Or not? That's a mathematical question, it's not a physics question. Okay, I want to close and, you know, with this, and if there are questions or you want to discuss afterward.